Hey everyone, welcome into another episode of A Must-Win Game with Maggie Gray. On today's show, there is more news coming out of Los Angeles when it comes to the sale of the Lakers. I unpack it all with Ben Golliver. He is a senior NBA writer for ESPN. We worked together back at the Sports Illustrated days. Many a fun draft show with Ben Golliver and just one of the smart NBA writers who I'm lucky enough to know. So we talk about everything that has to do with Jeannie Buss now going against her siblings to try to remain in some way connected with the Lakers, to have some kind of ownership stake. It had been down to about 17-ish percent after the sale to Mark Walter and then the sale again to Joshua Kushner and Bob Iger. And now the other Buss siblings want out completely. And Jeannie, as the governor of the team, she thinks she has a case to stay on in some way with the Lakers. Really fun conversation with Ben Golliver. Not only do we get into, of course, the Lakers, the impact on the Dodgers, because Ben has lived in Los Angeles for about 10 years. We talk a little about LeBron James in Philadelphia and a question about whether or not the Knicks are actually a feared basketball team in the NBA or whether people are just sort of patted them on the head, like congrats on your title. But not expecting them to do much more after that. So one small note, if you're watching this on YouTube, or even if you're not, hitting subscribe on my YouTube page, youtube.com/@amustwingame. It's so helpful. It's something really, really small, but it certainly does me a huge solid. If you want to follow me on social media, I wish you would, @MaggieGray on Twitter, @MaggieTalkSports on Instagram, and of course, @AmustWinGame on YouTube. Without further ado, here is Ben Golliver. Is now Jeannie Buss is fighting against her siblings. Now that's something that we've seen before in the past. She wants to remain part of the Lakers. Everyone else wants to sell. Ben, why is this a big deal for NBA fans?
Well, obviously it's the Lakers, probably the premier franchise, you know, one of the winningest franchises in NBA history, glamour franchise. You know, if you take a step back, it's just a lot of turnover, a lot of change here over the last couple of years. I mean, Mark Walter, he came in barely more than a year ago as kind of like a love bombing for Lakers fans. He told them, hey, I'm going to pay this record price. I'm going to make sure Jeannie gets to stay as the governor. I'm going to try to Dodgerize the Lakers and make them, a world-class operation, really elevate them, get them back onto a championship level with Luka Doncic. It turned out, though, he was just completely the wrong guy. All those promises basically turned out to be empty. He has now sold his share, and the pressure is mounting on Jeannie Buss potentially to get rid of the minority share the Buss family has held on to this point. For the Lakers, this is a critical time. This is a huge season for them as they try to, start the post-LeBron era, truly build around Luka, try to get back into the upper echelons of the Western Conference. And instead of focusing on the basketball and how they're going to have a great offense and the new dynamic combination between Luka Doncic and center Walker Kessler, the questions are, will Jeannie still be around? Is the front office, in trouble? How long are they going to last with this new ownership group led by Bob Iger and the Kushner brother? And then also, they were trying to build out a front office around Rob Pelinka with the help of this Dodgers brain trust. And now that's seemingly on hold because those guys are no longer part of the deal. It's the biggest franchise and it's a big mess.
Do you think Laker fans would be upset if Jeannie Buss was not the governor anymore?
Well, look, I mean, she was put in a very difficult position, as you mentioned, past legal troubles with her siblings, trying to steer the franchise in the right direction. The one thing we know about Jeannie, she was the most successful of all the Buss children in terms of actually managing the organization. You know, her brother's got a crack at it, and it didn't go so well. I think Lakers fans really appreciate the fact she was able to build a championship team around LeBron James in the bubble in 2020. Now, if that hadn't happened, maybe people would be saying, hey, it's time for a change. It's time to, switch things up. But I do think there is a loyalty factor from Lakers fans towards her because she's a familiar face. And sometimes change can be scary for any fan base. As I mentioned, you don't want the constant change, right? And you also don't want this dragging out. This could be a legal battle that lasts for a while. And I'm not sure that's in the best interest of the Lakers. You would like this all to be wrapped up quickly. And I'm not sure we're headed that direction.
Yeah, it seems like she's pretty dug in.
Well, this is her identity. I mean, she's been at so many Lakers games that I've attended over the years. Always sitting, in the courtside seats or nearby, often surrounded by celebrities or other longtime confidants within the organization. You'll remember when she needed to turn the team around, who did she turn to? None other than Magic Johnson. She was there when they retired Kobe Bryant's jerseys, put up statues in honor of his memory and his daughter's memory. And so she's been a very careful steward of this organization, and in some ways the face of it, right there alongside LeBron James here in recent years. But what we're learning is yesterday's Lakers might not be tomorrow's Lakers.
Yeah, what do you make of Bob Iger, who is obviously has run Disney two different times? Now a guy in his mid-70s is going to take over the Lakers, and he's going to basically run the Lakers. Do you think he's going to be successful?
Well, look, we know he has long relationships with lots of key players, right? Of course, Adam Silver, NBA commissioner, with Bob Iger having a long partnership there in their roles with ESPN being a broadcast partner. You understand Bob Iger was very hands-on during the NBA bubble process. You'll remember they did the restart of the NBA season down at Disney World, and of course, Disney and ESPN are the same corporate company, right? And so, to me, this looks like a legacy project opportunity for him. He's not like he's a lifelong Lakers fan. It's not even like, oh, he's this LA mover and shaker who gets associated with the city as much. He's really known as this sports media power broker, and now he's in a position where this glittering jewel of a franchise is going to have his fingerprints all over it. And it's got to be really exciting. You can imagine being in his position, stepping away from Disney. It's like, well, what's the next challenge? It's not like you just want to go golf all day long, or you don't want to go retire to an empty island, right? I mean, you want to be a part of something. And obviously, owning the Lakers is being a part of something really big. The highest sale price ever in the NBA, he agreed to.
Jeanie Buss was the one who decided to sell the team to Mark Walter in the first place. Like, how do you square that with now she seems kind of upset that Mark Walter turned around and sold the team and her siblings want to sell out when she was the one who originally put the team and the majority of the team up for sale to begin with?
Well, remember, she got a record price when she sold. So, this is a very challenging situation for everybody involved with the Lakers, but it's not like she's leaving this empty-handed. At the same time, when you're looking at an owner like Mark Walter, who has had such consistent success with the Dodgers for more than a decade, year after year after year, going to the playoffs and winning World Series titles and all those kinds of things, you kind of think you know what you're getting with the business partner. And clearly she wanted to stay with the organization. That's why they had the idea where she could be the governor for a number of years going forward. And so I could just put myself in her position and imagine she's got to be feeling blindsided. I think anybody would in that spot. But when you make the decision to sell the majority, stake in that franchise, you're no longer the person who's in charge like your family was for a long time. We've seen that play out with other ownership groups, by the way. Of course, with the Celtics, when they were selling, there was all sorts of different groups who wanted to be involved there. Once you sell, you're no longer the boss. That's how it goes.
Yeah, and if Jeannie and her siblings end up going to court and this ends up getting dragged out and dragged out, does that impact the actual sale of the team or not at all?
Well, I think that the way it's been explained to me is that the majority control of the team has already been sold, regardless of the Buss family share, right? And so they'll be able to come in and make their decisions. Now, they're going to have to make very big decisions, such as who gets to be the governor, who goes to the NBA meetings, who has the final say. And usually, when you have the majority share, that will be you. It was a very unusual situation, actually, where Jeannie was getting to hold that power with Mark Walter as her partner. And he's a guy who has investments in a number of sports franchises. It didn't seem like the Lakers were necessarily his number one priority, so that's why he structured it that way. But if you're the Lakers' new ownership group, I think the quote they put out there recently in an article was, well, if things change, they'll change with regard to Jeannie Buss's role as governor. And you would imagine that things have changed now as they're trying to buy out the Buss family completely.
Yeah, I would say so. What do you make of three franchises, major NBA franchises, selling over the last couple of years? Obviously, the Lakers sold twice, but we'll just count it as one. The Boston Celtics and the Dallas Mavericks. What do you make of these marquee franchises and marquee owners selling off?
Look, it's a gold rush time period right now for professional sports franchises. It's not just the NBA. You saw the Seahawks sell in the NFL for a huge price. You see major soccer teams overseas selling.
this is where people who are making lots and lots and lots of money like to park the money. I mean, it seems like a pretty good life, right? I mean, you get to sit courtside at the Lakers games with the celebrities. You know, you get to try to compete if you're a competitive person for a championship. And it's a huge status symbol. There's a very limited number of these franchises, and the bidding wars have just been going crazy. And I think that's part of the reason why on the seller side, you've seen teams that maybe weren't up for sale for a long time in the past say, hey, now is the time to sell high and get in on this gold rush. But there's really been no end in sight. I mean, it's pretty remarkable that the Lakers go from $10 billion last summer, which opened everybody's eyes and made people just, you know, go goo goo gaga, like they couldn't believe it. And now it's up to 12.5 just a year later. I mean, what's that mean for next year or the year after? And this is a situation for the NBA specifically where they could be a victim of their own success, right? Because you have this past generation of NBA owners who just were obsessed with basketball. I'm thinking about like Mark Cuban when he came in, right? All he wanted to do was turn the Mavericks into this successful team. Well, he said, sells it to a family group there with gambling ties in Las Vegas. They're looking at it as more of a financial proposition rather than a basketball proposition. And what do? Oops, they accidentally trade Luka Doncic, very shortly after they buy that franchise. And now the Mavericks are in a much different position as a team, right? And so you could continue to see that with different ownership groups that are coming in. If business is first, or if business is really all they care about, as opposed to competing for championships, putting teams together, establishing a winning culture, and those kinds of things, we could see some franchises that we thought we knew pretty well look very different as we go forward here in this new era.
You know, you live in LA and you've lived there for a long time. What do you make now of all the speculation about whether the Dodgers are going to get sold? I know you don't cover Major League Baseball, but yeah. I mean, you're in this city. The Dodgers are a huge deal in LA. Mark Walter still is the owner of the Dodgers, but the latest I'm seeing from you guys at ESPN is he's also kind of like, you know, if you make him a deal, if you make him an offer, just like with the Lakers, you might get a marquee baseball franchise also.
Well, are you putting together a group? That's kind of what it sounds like. It sounds like you've got some exploratory interest there, Maggie.
Yeah, me and my mom friends out in the suburbs of New Jersey, we're getting a collective together by the Dodgers.
All I really know is the reports I've read, which it sounds like the financial situation he's in is fairly perilous compared to where it was, or precarious maybe, compared to where it was a year ago. Obviously, that's the crown jewel. One thing I know about Mark Walter, every time he would walk around Lakers games, he was always wearing a Dodgers blue jacket, you know, a real bright blue jacket. He was always wearing the baseball hat. And there was a couple of times where he was actually at games pretty quickly after they had won the World Series. And you talk about a victory lap. I mean, that guy was one of the most popular people in the building. You know, he's right there with Denzel Washington and some of the other big time celebrities, because here he is, this figure and iconic, iconic LA figure in sports teams. So my guess is it'd be harder to get the Dodgers than the Lakers. But then again, if you asked me 2 weeks ago, are the Lakers for sale? I would have said, no way. I mean, this guy's probably going to want to own them for 10, 15 years. And so I think when you get into, these billion-dollar deals, whether it's for the teams or the way that they're financing the teams, it creates situations that can really pivot quickly. And by the way, he's not the only one. You know, we saw the Phoenix Suns owner recently. He's in the mortgage industry. His company has had, kind of fallen on hard times here over the last 6 months, and that's kind of changed his financial outlook as well. You've seen some other owners where if the stock market shifts from Monday to Tuesday, all of a sudden they're worth, 20, 30% more than they were the previous day, right? And so we're in a very interesting time, I think, economically as a society, and we're just getting a real sliver of it here when it comes to the pro sports teams.
Is that something that Adam Silver has to keep an eye on to make sure, because, I know Mark Walter had a great reputation. He was already a sports owner, and so he seemed kind of like the perfect person to take hold of the Lakers. But as you just said, it's precarious. Same thing with Phoenix. And now they're going to be, finding new owners for Las Vegas. How careful does Adam Silver have to be with who he decides to get into business with?
Well, the NBA has a vetting process. There's no question for all the groups. The challenging part, they're almost a victim of their own success because the prices have gotten so high. You can't just go out and, most people don't have $10 billion sitting in a bank account, ready to buy a team. And so that means you get more consortiums, more conglomerates, you get more private money. We've also seen, in some cases, sovereign wealth funds of foreign countries, often in the Middle East, potentially able to buy into some of these franchises in a minor way, at least for now. And so that creates a lot of challenges, whether they're moral challenges, whether they're financial challenges, background challenges. But one thing we've seen during this era for the NBA is that they have been dead set on trying to rise those franchise prices almost by any means necessary. You know, they've restructured the salary cap. They've taken a lot of partnerships with gambling companies and other avenues that maybe they wouldn't have done in past eras. They want to grow the pie. They want everybody, you know, having record contracts, whether it's the players or record profits. If it's the owners, record ticket prices, as we saw at Madison Square Garden throughout that Knicks finals run, right? So it's been growth in the NBA. And so I think, I'm not sure if you can second guess approving Mark Walter, even though he pivoted here so quickly, because on paper, he looks like exactly the type of owner that you would want. And he had a track record of being an owner in a different sport, which often these commissioners really like. You know, it just prevents, you know, it's like safety in numbers, right? It's like, oh, he's an NFL owner, he could be an NBA owner. Oh, he's a baseball owner, he could be a football owner. It's a very hard club to crack into. And there's a lot of people with a whole heck of a lot of money who are trying to get in.
Well, somebody who bought their own ticket to game 4 of the NBA finals, I can attest to the ticket prices being pretty high. And I actually think that's why nobody left, because the Knicks were down by 30 for a majority of that game, it felt like. And nobody left their seat. And I think it's because we all paid a pretty penny to be in. Isn't this just
the beauty of pro sports, though, Maggie, is you got your money's worth.
I did. And I got lucky. And isn't it just like, it's not ironic. Maybe it's just like the way the universe is, that the Clippers are again kind of like pushed to the back burner when they had sort of been the major story over the offseason. Our former colleague, Pablo Torre, I mean, he's done a 14, 15 part series on, you know, a lot of evidence alleging that the Clippers were circumventing the salary cap to pay Kawhi Leonard in some very creative ways, whether it was tree companies that have gone belly up, whether it was getting paid through the scoreboard creators, Daktronics, who create the jumbotrons that we all see in stadiums. You know, now we're seeing from you guys over at ESPN that it doesn't look like Steve Ballmer, the owner of the Clippers, is really going to face that much, discipline. And there isn't much evidence, at least that the NBA can find, that there has been improprieties there. What do you make of where the Clippers stand right now with Kawhi?
I mean, it's just a complete mess. And I think the NBA league office knows that. And we were talking to Commissioner Adam Silver in Las Vegas, you know, during the summer league and the NBA's board of governors meetings. And you could almost tell he was exasperated. I mean, to make things even more complicated, putting aside the actual investigation, you have a trade that was essentially agreed to that's been on hold now for, you know, more than a month, where Kawhi Leonard's supposed to go play with the Raptors. He keeps showing up at events in Toronto. I think he was at a tennis tournament. You know, he's pretty much trying to fake it till he makes it, right? Just keep going and hope that trade winds up going through so that he can have a new home to start next season. Meanwhile, the Clippers want, finalizing that trade as well. They want certainty coming out of that, because they're looking to pivot to a new era. When you look back at the Kawhi Leonard era with the Clippers, was it worth all this mess, right? I mean, all these allegations, all these reports, what did he really produce with the Clippers? You know, one of my favorite stats is when the Toronto Raptors championship run in 2019, Kawhi Leonard won 16 playoff games, got finals MVP. They won the championship. In his 7 years with the Clippers, he won a total of 17 playoff games, right? Now, you know, he never really played in the conference finals. Obviously, they never made the finals or won a championship. And you think about how much more the Clippers paid, even just on the books, right? How much more they paid him in those 7 years as a max player, as a franchise guy, compared to what Toronto did in just that one season. Obviously Kawhi's a Southern California guy, so that's ultimately why he came home in 2019. But you also think, what if he had just stayed in Toronto? Would everybody have been better off? Would he have a better legacy? Would all this mess have been avoided? Would the Clippers not find themselves in a situation where year after year after year they were trying and failing to build a winner around him? It was a respectable team, don't get me wrong, but it wasn't a team that ever got over the hump like they wanted to. And so you look back, you know, LeBron leaves L.A. and Kawhi leaves L.A. this summer. And LeBron, I really feel like he can leave L.A. with his head held high. Won a championship, I think had a real era, set the NBA scoring record. Obviously, they're on national TV game after game after game, night after night after night. You know, Christmas showcases, all these kinds of things. And I ask you, Maggie, what do you remember besides this scandal from the Kawhi Leonard era with the Clippers. I mean, this was the biggest get in the summer of 2019. How did it go?
Yeah, I think it's that coupled with what they had to trade away to get Paul George to pair them up together. And they had to trade away Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. That's, I mean, right. Either way, like, it's not pretty.
They built a dynasty in Oklahoma City. I mean, that's really the legacy of the Kawhi Leonard era. And that's just salt in the wounds for the Clippers.
Oh, my gosh. Speaking of LeBron James, I have not gotten your thoughts yet on him deciding to go with the Philadelphia 76ers. I know all the reasons, Ben, why it could work, right? Like, you see the roster. You see Nick Nurse, speaking of Toronto, won that title with Kawhi Leonard. He's now in Philadelphia. I see all the reasons why it could work. What's a reason why it would not work in Philadelphia?
Well, I think Joel Embiid's health is the biggest question mark. I mean, I've seen the photos coming out from the summer. Boy, he looks slim. He looks in great shape. And that's great to see. But this is a guy who's been a perennial disappointment in the playoffs. I mean, it's not always his fault. Usually it's his body, you know, kind of, you know, giving up on him at the worst possible moment. We saw it again, even in the brilliant playoff run they had last year, brilliant but short. You know, they have this great, you know, get the monkey off your back victory against the Celtics, their rivals. And the second round, you know, Embiid's not really out there, and it winds up being a pretty quick deal. You know, a couple of those games, he's just not even able to play. So to withstand week after week after week of the playoff grind for Embiid, you know, given the state of his body, is the biggest question. And if they don't have him out there, I don't think the backups that they have available to them are going to be able to compete at the very highest level to win a championship. But I'll tell you this, I'm not sure I've been more excited for a LeBron James partner, you know, compared, like, going back to, say, Kyrie with the Cavaliers than I am about Maxi. Maxi is a really fun player. He's been the heart and soul of that team. He probably deserves, you know, top billing credit, you know, for their success last season, in my opinion, given his consistency, how many big shots he made and those kinds of things down the stretch. And I think there's already a good friendship bond. You know, we've seen online how they talk about each other. It's a real mutual respect. And I think it's going to work really well between the two of them on the court. What I want to see from LeBron, I want to see Team USA LeBron, point forward LeBron, spread the basketball around. You know, if this is the year where he has this career low of scoring, I think that's actually a situation where it could be the best case for everybody and they win a bunch of games, because there's a lot of mouths that have to get fed over there. You got Jaylen Brown, Joel Embiid, Tyrese Maxey, those are all number one option guys on the same team. And I don't want VJ Edgecombe to get forgotten about either, because he was sensational as a rookie and I think has a huge promise as a two-way player. And so for LeBron, take a step back as a scorer, concentrate your effort if you can on your defensive energy, because he's going to play a key role back there for Philadelphia. And then, you know, show us those brilliant playmaking and passing skills that we've seen, especially like we saw over in Paris when they won gold medal. I think that's the way to do it. That's the formula for the Philadelphia 76ers.
And this one, I didn't see it get a lot of play nationally, but I feel like within like the Golden State Warrior fan base, it actually did get a little bit of buzz, and in the Bay Area, about Mike Dunleavy had this kind of like bizarre press conference where he said Steph Curry will be, you know, a Warrior for life unless, you know, he comes to us and he actually wants to go somewhere else. And it was like this weird kind of even possibility to float out there when it didn't seem like this was, you know, in the air at all. And then Mike Dunleavy kind of put it out there. What did you make of that? Do you think that Steph could be going somewhere?
Not really. What I would make of it is if you don't make any moves during the summer, people will read between the lines on every single quote and they'll parse your quotes because they've got nothing else to talk about. You know, it's been a very, very quiet offseason for the Golden State Warriors. Now, there is one exception, Jaxel Lendenborg. He led the team to the Summer League Championship, and boy, was he giving us gold in his post-game interviews. That guy is probably the most quotable player in the NBA already as a rookie. At least he's up there with like Draymond and a couple of these other guys, right? So let's say top five. But when the front office is just hamstrung because of Jimmy Butler, his contract, and then his injury, they really didn't have a lot of flexibility to go out there and try to upgrade the roster. And it was a very disappointing season last year. And if you're a Warriors fan, you're sitting around saying, like, just give me some cause for hope. This can't all be about Jaxel Lendenborg, the oldest guy in the draft, coming in to, like, change things. I mean, that's not going to be worth 10 or 15 wins to a team that is accustomed to competing for championships and really a fan base that wants Steph to always have one more chance at another title, right? That's always their mentality. And it kind of feels like they're drawn dead coming into this season. You know, I look at the Western Conference landscape, I could make a case for 10 teams being above Golden State. And how many times have we said that over the course of Steph Curry's prime? Not very many. And so I guess the real takeaway here is, if you're Mike Dunleavy Jr., you're saying, Jimmy Butler, get healthy ASAP, get back on the court ASAP, because we invested a lot in trading for you and giving you the extension, and we need to see what you're able to do on the court to maybe give Steph a little boost. But it gets rarer and rarer year by year where these superstar guys stay with one franchise for their whole careers. You know, I know the Celtics fans were really upset Jaylen Brown, you know, didn't get to be one of those guys. And I know they're really hoping Jason Tatum does get to be one of those guys. We saw Milwaukee fans, you know, finally, I think after years and years of rumors, coming to terms with, hey, Giannis isn't going to be one of those guys either. I don't know what – I would be stunned if Steph wasn't those guys. But, you know, this business gets crazier and crazier every year. So never say never, I guess.
You know, one small little one. Because we just were talking about the Knicks game that I was at game four. And, you know, I was there. I was at the parade. You know, I live in New York. And so it became this really big deal. I can't tell, though, Ben, nationally, do people see the New York Knicks as a team to be feared, or do they look at them and say, oh, good for the Knicks? Like, likable guys, likable enough guys on the team, people kind of happy for the fan base maybe or not. But are the Knicks actually feared by the rest of the NBA?
I'm not sure they've gotten to that level, and they probably deserve it a little bit more than they get. I mean, they just steamrolled through the playoffs, and they caught lightning in a bottle. They couldn't miss a three-point shot. They had all these incredible comebacks. Every time they needed a basket, Jalen Brunson was there doing it. But I think the NBA fan, the national fan, is accustomed to, you know, top five all-time players winning championships, right? Like LeBron and Tim Duncan and Michael Jordan, and, you know, the list goes on and on of those kinds of guys. And, you know, only Jalen Brunson's biggest fans, I think, would probably put him into that category. And so that's why it's a little bit unusual. We saw the same reality, actually, with the Celtics with their championship and the Oklahoma City Thunder with their championship, where people are saying, well, how good is Tatum? How good exactly is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander? Are these guys all-timers, or are they really just MVP-level players? Because, of course, there's a difference. And so, you know, one way you become an all-timer is you go back-to-back, and you just kind of answer every question that's out there. Now, I would probably bet against the Knicks doing that. You know, we haven't seen a repeat champion since the Golden State Warriors team. That was absolutely loaded. New York had very good health in the moments that mattered. You can imagine, you know, if OG Anunoby had one of those hamstring deals during the playoffs that really lingered, how that would have changed their fortune in the finals, right? And so, you know, I think that they have a lot to prove, but hopefully they're putting that as a chip on their shoulder, right? I'm just glad I haven't heard too many people discounting that title, though, because I didn't see it coming. And sometimes when people get surprised by a championship, they want to say, oh, it's not really that great. It's not really that great. That was an iconic title. I mean, you saw from the way it was celebrated in the building, the way it was celebrated with the parade. And I'll tell you what, just being down there for the closeout game in San Antonio, the way the Knicks fans celebrated in Texas, you know, they were going absolutely crazy. It was a stadium takeover. I couldn't believe it. And so I think that's, you know, one of the better championships we've seen in a while. And now they get to try to do it again.
Man, has anyone seen Wemby? Is he with the Monks? Is he back with the Monks? No?
Well, I know he's been playing chess over in France. He was part of a chess tournament. I know that's one of his favorite hobbies. And he actually hosted a whole bunch of his Spurs teammates. I think almost every single guy on the team was over there with him. It's a nice perk, you know, must be nice when you're your newly minted max contract, franchise center could just bring everybody over to the City of Lights and celebrate during the summertime. Must be nice.
Yeah, didn't get the invite on that one. I didn't either. But, you know, also chess is nice and safe. You know, you don't know. They're not going to twist an ankle. You're not going to pull a hamstring. Just sit there and play chess. But again, thank you so, so much. This was awesome.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Okay, that's going to do it for this episode of A Must-Win Game. I hope you guys enjoyed my conversation with Peter King. That dropped on Monday, previewing the 2026 NFL season. I'll be back with you on Friday with another episode. Until then, be well.